With What's News, I'm Charlie Turner in New York for the Wall Street Journal. Online companies that help diners make reservations at restaurants are squabbling over diners' information. More on this in a moment. First, here are some headlines. Stay up to date with the Wall Street Journal in the wake of President Trump's first veto. On Friday, Mr. Trump vetoed a congressional resolution disapproving of his national emergency declaration, asserting his authority to tap funding for barriers on the southern border, even though the money hadn't been appropriated by lawmakers. The veto is unlikely to be overridden, but the Journal says the dynamic could be altered when details become known of which military construction projects Mr. Trump intends to draw from to fund the wall, and lawmakers look to protect interests in their states. A lot of attention will be focused across the pond as another vote is scheduled this week on UK Prime Minister Theresa May's plan for Britain to exit the European Union. Lawmakers have voted down her plan twice already. Last week, they torpedoed a no-deal Brexit proposal, and they voted to delay the previously scheduled Brexit date of March 29th. Keep an eye on Boeing stock, which recovered late last week after being hammered in the wake of the second fatal crash involving the company's 737 MAX plane. The jet was grounded worldwide. A published report said Boeing could soon roll out a software upgrade for the MAX. The Wall Street Journal says that eggs may not be so good for you after all, according to a large study that links higher consumption of dietary cholesterol with cardiovascular disease and death. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Among its findings, eating 300 milligrams of dietary cholesterol a day was associated with a 17% higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease and an 18% higher risk of death from any cause. Researchers based their findings on analyses of the eating and health patterns of a diverse population of over 29,000 adults over several years. Still ahead, online reservation takers are squabbling over diners' data. If you've followed stories about social media, you know that handling and control of user data is a hot topic. That's also become true with regard to restaurant diners' data. The Wall Street Journal says OpenTable, the table booking service, is barring restaurants from sharing data with rival booking services without its permission. Establishments are barred from giving competitors access to diner data acquired through OpenTable unless they pay new fees. Joining us in our studio with more on this is the Wall Street Journal's Micah Maidenberg. Micah, the above was according to an updated client agreement that OpenTable released Friday that was subsequently tweaked. The fees provision is new, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Restaurants and restaurant groups were using think of it as like a customer relationship management tool called 7Rooms, and giving it access to their OpenTable account. 7Rooms would sort of get into a group's, you know, restaurant account and sort of automatically pull data out of it. And then the restaurant groups would sort of use that information to manage tables, reservations, and also build profiles about guests coming in, you know, for a meal.
And really, this is all about the information that diners give when they make a reservation online, isn't it? I mean, the data is obviously a gold mine because they can, for all I know, use algorithms to figure out diners' preferences. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So many sort of parts of life and commerce right now, data is the coin of the realm. It's a very crowded environment. And restaurants want to be able to personalize their menus and have an easy way to track preferences of guests and even keep track of diners, like repeat diners who might have an allergy or a preference on where they sit, or, you know, be able to easily flag if somebody is a VIP, for example.
What about OpenTable? Why don't you tell us how OpenTable's platform works?
Yeah, well, OpenTable is a huge aggregator of diners for restaurants in the U.S. and in other countries as well. OpenTable has a consumer portal. You know, you can go to their website and search for a Chinese restaurant and, you know, your town or Italian or whatever, and they'll give you options. You can book a table at that restaurant potentially through that site. You could do this through their mobile app. And you can also, OpenTable also has an option where you can book through a restaurant's website using some of their technology. So, I mean, the most important thing to think about with OpenTable is they are the ones that lots of consumers and diners are using to find you know, where they want to eat out. So they're kind of a gatekeeper. Restaurants both need them because they have this huge reach, and they also have somewhat of a tense relationship with OpenTable because, you know, they have to pay for those diners.
It's about $1.50 a diner?
Yeah, up to $1.50 for each person in a reservation. So, you know, those costs, restaurateurs have told me, can add up. At the same time, some of them think of that cost as sort of a business development tool or a lead generation cost and are happy to pay it if new people are coming into the eatery.
Is the criticism here that OpenTable is putting the squeeze on rivals like Seven Rooms?
That's definitely what a lot of restaurateurs, you know, thought, you know, when I talked to them about this story. They say that when you or I or anybody else books through OpenTable, we want to have a relationship with them, with the restaurateur. We're not interested in having an ongoing relationship with OpenTable, which is just sort of aggregating us, you know, into the restaurant. And so their position is we can do what we want with that data, including managing it within Seven Rooms. Obviously, OpenTable has a very different interpretation of this.
And you write, Micah, that amid the criticism, OpenTable said Friday that it has agreed to allow restaurateurs using Seven Rooms to integrate the platform with its system in exchange for a fee. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned fees in the story. What are the new fees that OpenTable will charge?
So if you're a restaurant group and you're using OpenTable to find diners, you know, to send them to your restaurants, and you're using Seven Rooms to sort of manage guest profiles, to manage tables and related services, you can now take those two software packages and sort of link them together as long as you as the restaurateur, pay OpenTable for that privilege. And I guess the question that we'll be watching in the days and months ahead is, how will this pricing work out?
Are these fees extravagant?
For existing customers of Seven Rooms, it's $250 per month per location, you know, to connect the two systems. For somebody new, it could be $1,000 per month per location, according to folks that I talked to.
And again, Micah, don't OpenTable's critics, including Seven Rooms and its restaurateur clients, say that OpenTable's not really interested in protecting user privacy. It's concerned about controlling client information.
Right. I mean, it's a really interesting situation because Seven Rooms has this sort of model where they say they can work with any sort of technology that, you know, a restaurant operator is using, whether it's OpenTable or Yelp or any others. But Seven Rooms and OpenTable are also competing with each other. So for restaurateurs, some of the restaurateurs I talk to sort of look at OpenTable and say, well, they're trying to squeeze this smaller player, this startup, out of the system. And, you know, OpenTable absolutely denies that, but focusing on, you know, privacy and security. But there's tension kind of within the system because they are working together and competing at the same time.
Right. Wall Street Journal reporter Micah Maidenberg joining us in our studio. Thanks, Micah.
Thank you, Charlie.
And that's What's News. I'm Charlie Turner in New York for The Wall Street Journal.